Oh, I thought we agreed this was just a dance fight. We were snapping and leaping and clearly pretending to hit one another. Now you have a knife? The stakes of this were not clear in West Side Story, which was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Hello, my name's Sean Collier. I am not in the same place as two military jurors. I don't even know how they pick those people. It's Robin Hitchcock.
Objection.
And Camila Adams.
Sustained.
There you go. That where we are in a minute. But last time was A Few Good Men at 88 and a third. Live during the recording, I said that that was our new number 10. I was mistaken. That is our new number 9.
Oh.
It is the same score as Men in Black. A Few Good Men wins the tiebreaker thanks to the 91 that I gave it. And we kept saying, like, this is a surprisingly good movie, like Men in Black.
Yeah.
We're in different places. I don't know. Someone explain why.
It's cold.
It's fucking cold.
And it's a fucking polar vortex happening.
Yes, we are buried in the snow. There's no possibility of parallel parking in this universe until the snow melts. Sound
quality.
Get
me out of this room.
Deal with it.
Maybe have this one, you know, I don't know if your podcast habits are like mine. This is maybe not the headphones episode. This
is sure.
Like the in the car episode or even the playing on your phone while you're walking around cleaning the house episode.
Nice.
Where the quality is less essential. In any case, we're happy to be with you, challenges aside, especially to talk about West Side Story. This is I'm glad to again be correcting a great big gap in my cinema knowledge, because I had not seen, you know, of course I've seen bits of it, but I had not seen this beginning to end. I saw the remake first. Remake's okay. Good. Spielberg, that guy knows what he's doing. But I was pretty well enchanted on my first viewing. It's very I hate it when people say they don't make them like that anymore, but they don't make them like that anymore. I just want movies to look like this again.
Really?
That kind of like color and grit at the same time. Whatever this cinematography is, I just love it.
Really okay. Good sets, I think, is something we don't get a lot of anymore. It's, first of all, we don't get sets. We get the volume, you know what I mean? Or shot on location, right? It's like digital or location. We don't get these elaborate city streets built on a back lot.
What were both of your history with this pillar of the Western cinema?
I mean, of course, I had seen it once or twice. It never stuck out as anything that I would revisit often, but I always do. I love America, the song.
Yeah.
So that's on my plate. Like I get that randomly shuffled every once in a while. So, and also Rita Moreno, the fucking goat. Like she, I always love watching her do anything. But yeah, I don't even know what context it was that I saw this the first time. Either it was just on AMC or it was in like a high school class or something. It wasn't on purpose necessarily.
I saw this as a kid. I loved it as a kid. I had not seen it in at least 30 years. And wow. I, while watching it, was like, why haven't I seen this in at least 30 years? I love this. And like, as regular listeners will recall, my favorite plot is people who love each other and can't be together. So I love every riff on Romeo and Juliet. So, yeah.
Riff?
Sean, how were your Twin Peaks feelings managed during this?
Oh my God. I was just so happy. I was just so, and like, I looked around to see if there was like, cause like David Lynch famously loves Wizard of Oz. I looked around to see if he felt similarly about West Side Story. I think he liked West Side Story, but it seems almost coincidental.
Yeah.
That he cast the two most prominent male characters in West Side Story as prominent characters in Twin Peaks. But yeah, especially when they had a scene alone together, I was like, this just makes me feel so happy. And
stuff. Wait, so it was Riff Raff and Tony?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Tony and Riff are both in the shorter list of people who are both prominent in Twin Peaks in the late 80s, early 90s, and did The Return in the 2010s. Oh. So, at which Mary Beth and I are watching now. So I'm seeing both of those guys as 80-year-old men fairly regularly. So
your Lynchian heart is full.
Absolutely. And there's a relationship there. You could write a thesis that draws a line from like West Side Story to Blue Velvet, right?
I've never seen Blue Velvet, actually.
I don't know if I can recommend it. Sorry.
We do not have time. So if you're like me, and no one is,
if you're under the age of 15 and have not seen.
I genuinely do not know. Like, we are all in our 40s. I do not know how much this plays for people who are in their 20s or 30s.
I feel like it's probably still a staple in like a lot of English classes.
Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. So if like you're still teaching Romeo and Juliet, then West Side Story is still going to get a footnote. In the conversation.
I mean, it's certainly still performed.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're a theater kid, right. Which is weird because I was, but anyway, yeah. What I do wonder is if you're a teacher who's doing a Romeo and Juliet and it's like, oh, we should show them West Side Story. If you show the new one just so you don't have to have a long conversation about
Brown Face. I was thinking that it's been a while since I've had to edit in I Can Excuse Racism.
I can excuse racism.
You can excuse racism.
But here we are.
we're in it.
Yeah.
Hey, brown face is wrong.
Yes.
You can both do the justification, not the justification. You can both do the hand waving or the yeah, but with this one, because the hand waving is if you made a list of movies from the 50s and 60s that had someone playing someone not of their race, it's every movie.
Yeah.
Granted. However, the presence of Rita Moreno clearly is like, well, you coulda.
Right.
Also, you knew you had that option.
Like, exactly. George Chakiris, if you look at his actual face, I wouldn't be like, there's no way that man is Puerto Rican. You know what I mean? Like, right. There's light-skinned people from Puerto Rico, so just let him be.
Right, exactly. Like, yep. He's Greek.
Yeah.
Is his heritage, because I had to look it up, because I was like, his facial features feel Latino. So why are we doing this? But that caked on makeup is telling me otherwise. But
his facial features feel fucking hot.
Chiseled.
He is so good looking. I don't know what to do about it.
It is kind of ridiculous. Like,
and like that tucked in red shirt. Holy shit.
Good luck. Good luck.
I don't know how we got from Brown Face's bad corner to... corner. But that said, Natalie Wood, oh my God, like, even if all you showed were her eyes, I'd be like, this is the most beautiful person in the world. The rest is icing on the cake.
Yeah,
my God, her in this movie,
she is very she's very beautiful.
And so is Rita Moreno. Good looking cast.
But yes, your mileage may vary as a result of, you know, it's both common and inexcusable, like a lot of things in the history of cinema. That said, let me tell you what happens in West Side Story. Someone say go.
What happened was, go.
We're on the Upper West Side, where rival gangs, the Jets, who are white, and the Sharks, who are Puerto Rican, vie for control of the neighborhood when they're not busy hating the cops. They literally decide to fight about it, but complication, nominal Jet leader Tony is in love with Maria, the sister of Shark leader Bernardo. Despite plans for a relatively low-stakes fist fight to settle things, Maria makes Tony promise to intervene and stop the violence. Tony tries, but generally does a shit job of it. Bernardo kills Tony's little buddy, Riff. Tony kills Bernardo in a fit of rage and goes into hiding. Maria is mad about the dead brother thing, but still plans to flee the city with Tony. Tony goes to get ready, but a convoluted message mix-up involving a truly disturbing scene of sexual assault leads to Tony being convinced that Maria has been killed by shark goon Chino. Tony runs around town demanding that Chino kills him too, but changes his mind when he sees Maria is alive, only for Chino to kill him anyway. Maria thinks about killing everybody, but doesn't. The sharks and the jets carry Tony's body away with a somberness that apparently wasn't earned by Bernardo or Riff. If I were Robin or Camila or Addie, I would have tried to sing this, but I didn't wanna, so as a makeup, here's me trying to hit the famously difficult Maria interval. Maria. That was close.
If I did it, I would have gone Romeo Juliet in America, period.
Yeah.
Nice.
And that well, kind of could be the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Period.
Yeah, genuinely, like, one of the heartwarming moments, and it happens two or three times, is anytime the sharks and jets are ready to stab each other, talking about stabbing each other, talking about how much they hate each other, and then even one cop walks by and they immediately yes! unite 100% to be like, well, fuck them. We'll be back right. to hating each other later. We're best friends now.
Yeah, that was an interesting aspect of the whole thing. It's like, okay, yeah, I get it. Yeah, fuck those guys. Fuck them. No matter what is going on between us. They're worse.
Crup you.
Mm-hmm. Which also the cop, Arbogast from Psycho.
Really?
Or wait, was he not Arbogast, but or he was like the dude that ties everything together at the end.
Oh yeah. Well, those movies are a year apart.
Oh.
Oh boy.
He was busy.
Yeah, that's right. All right.
I forgot how much this movie feels like it's from the 60s, or maybe never new. Do you know what I mean? Like when I saw it as a kid, it was an old movie. And now that I have a better sense of time, I'm like, oh, this movie is very 1960s. And I yeah. love it.
Yeah.
It's not 50s. It's not 70s.
Right.
You know, I mean, it really feels of the moment in a way that a lot of things don't.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm not one for musicals. I would never put musicals as one of my favorite genres of movie.
Same.
But the ones that I do love, I go hard for. West Side Story is not one of them, but I do like, there's like the first two songs, I think, is what I really enjoy are the first three numbers, like dance numbers, and because they're so grand, they're so beautiful and big and just sassy, and there's like skirts are flying everywhere. Like, I am in love with that. But there's like, I think right after intermission is when I'm done with this movie. Like, I'm kind of over it.
That actually makes so much sense because, like,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, if you don't have your favorite plot being two people who love each other who can't be right. together, the end is sad and doesn't have the great musical numbers like you're saying. Mm. So that makes right. perfect sense to me.
There is ample struggle with that in the entire history of this, which I dug into that much. You know, you could read a book, but Officer Krupke was written because they were like, boy, is there nothing to hang on to in this second act.
Interesting. Like, okay.
We need a little comic relief and just a little energy after intermission.
Right.
Like in the Spielberg one, they move.
I was going to ask about that. They put Pretty after the murder, right?
They put I Feel Pretty after the murder, and they that put seems... Cool in the first half so that there's less like down stuff.
Yeah, but it made, I remember when we saw, Sean and I saw the 2021 one together, and I remember being like, this feels wrong. It's been a long time since I've seen this movie, maybe that I don't remember it correctly, but I'm like, something doesn't feel right. And when I watched the real one, sorry, Spielberg, yesterday, I was like, yep, this is better.
Yeah.
It's too jarring.
It is better.
Yeah.
I like the new one, but this is... I wrote down during the sequence that Camille is talking about, or during the first 30 minutes, 40 minutes, this stands as an insult to boring movies.
Yes!
Like if you can be this captivating with snapping and looking, you know, the first 10 minutes, they walk around, they look at each other, and they snap. And it's captivating.
Yeah.
So if you made a boring movie, you're just not good at this.
Yeah.
It's literally 10 minutes if you include the overture before anyone speaks.
Right.
Love an overture.
I haven't
set the tone.
I haven't agree.
Seen the full Spielberg one. Like I watched up until after America, after I watched this one. So, I mean, it seems fine. Like, I don't, like, it seemed like it was okay. Kaj was really digging the dance numbers, which I'm here for.
That's so
I'm like,
cute.
Yes, get this theater going. Like, get that theater blood moving. Mm-hmm. But I was, one of the things I was finding really, and I guess with both of them, or and as, in the original one, I was noticing a lot of play with light,
yes.
just the coloring of things. And I love that, like how, you know, things get drenched in red when things are like kind of down and whatnot and all the lighting. And then I also noticed, again, just in the first half of the color coordination and everything, like the blue, oh, who are they? The Sharks? No, the Jets. The white kids.
The Jets are the white guys.
Okay. Yeah. So they were like at the dance, at the school dance. Like they're all in some sort of form of, they've all got some form of teal on. And then like the other ones, I think it was all some form of red or whatever. And then
warm
like even
colors
like,
versus cool colors.
Yeah. And then we get to like America. Like everybody's got some sort of yellow in there. I don't know the significance of it, but everything is like splashed in yellow and stuff. So I was really enjoying like the color, the play with color in both of them. And I haven't really dug into the thinking on that as to what that all means, but I enjoy it.
Well, I mean, I'm thinking about, you know, you mentioned Ballad of a Small Player, one of your favorite movies last year.
Right.
One of the most colorful movies
right,
last
yes.
year. So that tracks. I think the choreography is like the core of this movie's success.
This wasn't Fosse, was it?
No, this is Jerome Robbins, who okay. my understanding is that he was the director of the Broadway play and he was the choreographer for this. And he's credited as one of the directors, which I think is really cool. So he's an Oscar winning director. And because this movie only works because the choreography is so brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
Like the way that they have these guys do fucking ballet.
Yeah.
To be tough guys is just phenomenal to me. And, you know, talking about that scene at the dance, I love the way that the white people have to do like flips and shit. And then the Puerto Ricans are like, well, here's how you actually dance.
Oh, it's like, okay, mira, but look, check this out.
Exactly.
Like, it's like, I'm going to let you finish, but.
Exactly. It's just so well. I mean, it's not just choreography. It's also the performers being up to the task of interpreting that choreography. But so the dancing is so good.
Here's one of the things that struck me. And I, you know, could again just be the times. But in the original version, it seemed that it was much, or they made a choice, or it was much easier to find actors who could dance and try to teach them how to look cool, as opposed to getting actors who looked cool and try to teach them how to dance.
I think you're onto something.
But in the original version, we managed to pull both off pretty well. Like, we got some cool looking tough guy actors who are actually still like really good dancers. And I know we haven't even gotten to the facts yet. We're like all okay.
There's so much to say.
I know. I mean, the last thing I'm going to say is that the kid who in the plays Tony in the new one, why is he like 8 feet tall? Like in comparison to everybody else, it was very jarring to watch him walk into the dance and see like, they're like, hey, Tony, hey, how you doing?
He's a big drag on that one. And I mean, that actor, like he's problematic. So I can't even remember what it is that he did, but it was something. Mm. And so it's hard to enjoy him. And he really is a drag on the Spielberg version, IMO.
And he's not like
good,
captivating or hot.
Handsome.
Or
yeah.
Like it's he has nothing. He brings nothing to the table.
And with all due respect to Richard Bayburn, like he is easily fifth out of the primary characters' performances, like by a lot. But you know, he at least looks good.
It's like it's like he never made a fist in his life. Like that was the first time when he was on screen. Is this how we do this? A feast? Is that why, a fist? Is that well?
to your point about their ability to dance, their ability to look cool, their ability to, I'm sitting there and I'm like, oh, dance fighting. Professional wrestling. I'm just watching wrestling. I'm watching tough performers athletically, you know,
yeah.
create
simulate
the
fighting.
Illusion
yeah.
of simulate fighting. And I'm like, this is why this is working for me so well. Well done.
Or a Michael Jackson video.
Yes.
Right.
This is Beat It. This is bad. This is
this is Step Up to the Streets.
I like Camila's comparisons more than Step Up to the Streets. West Side Story was released October 18th of 1961. It was the 17th number one movie of that year on December 20th when it was finally in a wide enough release to take the crown. We are pre-70s. We are pre-Jaws. Things still came up out slowly. So the actual Nomia date is December 20th of 1961. And it didn't win its second weekend. It lost to another musical, Flower Drum Song.
What is that?
Speaking of,
sounds familiar. It might be in my Oscar spreadsheet.
It was well regarded at the time. Boy, you think there's complicated racial and ethnic elements here.
Dear.
That was like an Asian musical.
Oh dear.
So have fun. So it did not win its second weekend, but it won at least 12 more weekends after that, all the way through to the summer of 1962. It was still picking up weekends here and there. It made at least $19.6 million in North America and $44.1 million globally. Its domestic total adjusted for inflation would be above $200 million. It might be the top grossing film of 1961. 101 Dalmatians also might be. We've said before, numbers are hard this far back. It was, however, the top grossing musical of all time upon its release, but only held that record for 4 years until The Sound of Music came out, also directed by Robert Wise. Let's get into Expensive Baubles.
Expensive Baubles.
Okay.
Robin?
Yesterday, Colin asked me, how many Oscars did this win? And I'm like, I'm not allowed to look it up.
Thank you.
So I do know that this movie won Best Picture, Best Director, Best Supporting Actor, and Best Supporting Actress. I assume it won like six more.
You are exactly correct.
Whoa!
It won 10 competitive Oscars, and you have named four of them. How do you say the name of the actor?
George Chakiris.
You are George Chakiris, Rita Moreno.
I didn't actually confirm that. That's just how I say it. He won the Best Supporting New Person I'd Like to Fuck award.
Yeah.
He's a great performer, let's be real. But he's so hot.
do you want to take a stab at the other six Oscars?
I do want to take another. So let's say editing.
Yes.
Art direction or production design, whatever they were calling it back then.
Art direction color. Yes.
Okay. Cinematography color.
Yes.
Score adaptation.
Yes. Or whatever it was called.
Right. Yeah. Sure. Sound didn't exist then. Oh, it did exist then. Okay.
Some version of sound existed then,
right?
And that's all I bothered to write down.
How
so that's
many
five.
Are left?
You're only missing
that's...
one. Only one.
I don't think this won a screenplay Oscar, but did it?
No, the best adapted screenplay was its only loss.
Oh, wow.
It won 10 of its 11, losing best adapted screenplay to Judgment at Nuremberg.
Oh, from my courtroom dramas list. Go to our Instagram. Yes. I don't know what the last one is.
Best costume design
of
color.
Of course, best costume. That no, red shirt. Yes, how could I forget?
Yeah. 10 Oscars. That places it fourth overall in Oscars for a single film. The record is still the three-way tie. 11 Oscars for Ben-Hur, Titanic, and Lord of the Rings, Return of the King. West Side Story is in fourth place with 10th. And yes, Sinners could beat them all. I'm not convinced it will.
We'll get to
it. Technically possible. Jerome Robbins was also given an honorary Oscar, so you don't really count
that. He won two Oscars for this movie?
Yes. He got a Best Director Oscar and was given an honorary Oscar basically for choreography. They were like, that was good enough that you get this. Even though he was actually dismissed from this film.
Okay. So hang on. Peeling back the curtain a little bit for people who don't have their own podcast, one of the tricks of the trade is to have some of the people on the show not know things coming in so they can discover along with the audience. Sean provides our facts and me and Camila react to them, right? I purchased West Side Story because I was immediately annoyed by the ads and started watching the commentary and watched maybe 15 minutes of commentary on different songs before someone said, so when Jerry was fired, and I was like, stop everything. I cannot hear another word of this. So I have been waiting for 24 hours to hear this story. Please, please let me know what happened.
So the producers basically paired Jerome Robbins, who did the original choreography, was intimately involved in the original Broadway run in a million ways, is really one of the people behind West Side Story, but had no film experience whatsoever with Robert Wise, who had directed dozens of movies from like little B movies to big lavish productions. He edited Citizen Kane. Like, this was, here's the guy that can keep this train on the tracks with the artistic guy. They set out to do the choreography and the dance sequences first. Very smart. Within like 6 weeks, somehow Jerome Robbins was 24 days behind schedule and over budget immediately. Wow. Because he was basically preparing a cast like they were going to do a Broadway production and perform it every night and drilling and rehearsing and over again. And it was good natured. It was as good natured as a firing could be, but they were like, hey,
go away.
Like, we gotta move this along, pal. Yeah.
You don't actually seem to have the ability to do the making the movie part of the making the movie. So you go home. We're still going to call you. Like, they were in regular contact. Mm. And because he had like three or four assistants who knew all the choreography and were developing with him, they just kind of did what he would have done. He still directed a lot of these, of the dance sequences. All of the choreography is his, and a lot of the general feel of the movie is his. For that reason, Robert Wise did say, yeah, I fired him, but he's getting a co-director credit. We're going to be listed as the two directors of this movie. And they both got Oscars for it.
Respect.
But yeah, what's,
well, it's like Brenda Chapman ideas, has an Oscar for Brave.
What's that?
Brenda Chapman won an Oscar for Brave, which she was fired from.
It happens, it sometimes happens. Hey,
yeah,
we could be here for weeks, months on facts, so I'm not going to do too many more than that. Just a few things. There's a ton of alternate casting. You could look that up all day. The most interesting is they wanted Elvis for Tony. They really wanted Elvis. And Colonel Tom Parker said, no, he's not doing that.
I don't think that would have worked very well.
Really? Why?
Because at this point, Elvis had already started doing his Elvis movies, right?
Gotcha. So you think he would have just been like this big distraction from the actual story
in
the movie?
When a commercial actor is in a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you're the guy who was Tony, was he sort of a no-name at that point in time?
I have no idea. The things I know about Richard Boehmer are he's in West Side Story and he's in Twin Peaks. Full stop.
That's all I've really worked out myself.
Oh, regarding expensive baubles, I did want to say a couple things. First of all, Natalie Wood wasn't nominated for this, but she was nominated for Splendor in the Grass the same year. So even if she had been catching votes for Best Actress, like, you could only be nominated once per category. I don't really think her performance here is nomination worthy. She didn't do the singing, I don't think. So, but, you know, just pointing that out. And I think Russ Tamblyn should have gotten his second nomination for this. Riff.
He was great.
And I also thought that Mike Face should have gotten one for 2021. So.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
You mentioned the singing. Many of these people didn't do any of it. Most notably, Maria was, the singing was done by Marnie Nixon. Marnie Nixon was the person who did this at the time. She did this for The King and I. She did this for West Side Story. She did it for Audrey Hepburn in My Fair Lady. And she had a very long career, sometimes doing like little extra vocals, like she's the geese in Mary Poppins. And sometimes covering for someone who can't sing well enough to do that, like an Audrey Hepburn or a Natalie Wood, all the way to playing Grandmother Fa in Mulan in 1998. So she stayed very, very active.
Good for her.
Throughout her life. Lived till 2016, too. So she had a good long life where she wasn't frequently on screen, but sings songs you can hear her singing in your head today. Hardly the only one. Jimmy Bryant is the name of the person who sang for Tony. Russ Tamblyn, sometimes singing, mostly singing, not on Jet Song. So he's singing Officer Krupke. He's singing throughout the movie. It's Tucker Smith singing on Jet Song.
I'm surprised there was a person with the first name Tucker in 1961.
Doesn't that seem wrong?
Yeah. It's like Kyle.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Kai or something like that. Yeah. And I just confirmed that Russ is Amber Tamblyn's dad.
Yes.
The wild thing, and boy, do I hope this stays true for the foreseeable future. They're both still with us.
As of recording.
Yeah.
Everybody Russ, but Natalie Wood is alive.
And of course, Rita Moreno, who we talked about frequently. 94.
Just stop talking about her right
now. Protect her.
But also, yeah, R.I.P. Catherine O'Hara.
I know, right? Oh. I was also thinking that. It's so sad. Gone too soon.
Oh, my God. And speaking of Rita Moreno, sometimes she was singing. Sometimes a singer named Betty Wand was singing. And sometimes Marnie Nixon was singing for her, too. It's just whatever, just whatever, like, was relevant.
Whatever, y'all. We'll just get this feeling out. Let's just go ahead and catch a vibe. I don't, like, it's just crazy to me that it was so unimportant in 1961, right, if for our actress to be able to sing in a musical.
Mm-hmm. And I will say, like, we talked about this when we did our Bohemian Rhapsody episode, which is a good one. Go back and listen to it. It's probably not what you think. I don't actually think it's required for you to be singing in a musical for you to be giving a good performance, right? Like, right. Rami Malek did not do that singing. That's still a good performance. Yeah. And Angela Bassett in What's Love Got to Do with It, one of the greatest film performances of all time. She was not doing the singing. So it's not mandatory, but I do think it weighs into calculations. And you're totally right that it used to just be the standard. Right. We'll get the best singers and they'll lip sync. And now it's like authenticity. We need the real voices.
It was his hour at last to put a seal on my fate. Wipe out the past and wash me clean off the slate.
And someone laid out here loses someone dear.
Prince Ali, fabulous, he, Ali Ababwa.
Finally a day that's totally wicked wish-free.
So first, your memory I'll jog. And say a cat is not a dog.
Which is wild. Especially considering, like... craving authenticity in this artificial world in 2026.
Sure. Yes.
Like, or not craving it, but demanding it. There it is.
That's it's a really just, good point.
Just, yeah.
I'm mostly driving Mary Beth's car because it's a Jeep and mine is not. And the snow that we mentioned. She's got the satellite radio, right? So I'm putting on the Springsteen station. And every now and then they'll be like, and now here's Jeremy Allen White singing Springsteen's thing from the movie. And I'm like, no. Whoa. Like, what
why we don't you, need why? To... He did that?
Yeah, I was like, yuck.
Oh yeah, he did something. It's like, why do you need me to hear someone else imitating the thing I'm here to hear?
That's
like
rude.
Like in the movie, maybe, but not like anyway.
Oh Jeremy.
Finally, boy is it time for lists from the American Film Institute. The AFI 100 Years 100 Movies, Robin, you want to hazard a guess where this fell?
14.
No, much lower. The original list, it was 41.
Oh, boy.
And on the new 100, it dropped to 51. Wow. On the list of passions, which was the romance list, it was number 3.
Number 3?
Okay.
Yeah.
Was number 1.
And movies that were made in 1961? Like, I know...
I'm pretty sure. No, we went over this. One is Casablanca, but 2 is Gone with the Wind.
Oh, that's right. We did talk about this. Yuck.
And West Side Story is number 3. On 100 Years, 100 Songs, West Side Story appears 3 times. America is 35th.
Tonight
is Maria. 59th. Maria is not. Somewhere is 20th. Somewhere is the highest rank.
You know, Somewhere is a song that I would never, like, put on to listen to. But that is a very effective moment in the film.
Gotta be honest, I fast-forwarded through a lot of them.
That's okay.
One of maybe the only better in the new version. Because Rita Moreno sings it in the new version. Moreno kind of, if you haven't seen the new version, she's a remixed version of the candy store owner. And they give that song to her and you'll be crying just a little bit.
Oh, which was nice to see her. Like, so I'm like, hey.
Yeah.
Yeah. And AFI's greatest movie musicals, number 2, I believe it was Sound of Music at number 1.
That, it would
be. But certainly, look. A pillar of the history of cinema. And I don't really have anything wrong with it. Like the closest
brown
I could, well, the brown face, other than the brown face, the closest I came to a flaw was like, boy, this movie loves planting a flag in, we're about to sing a song. Like someone just looking towards the sky and saying, tonight, Maria. Mambo. Anytime a song is coming, someone has to sneak. Yell the name of that song.
One of the things that bug me about musicals is the what do we do after our song is over? Now, that's very important to me. Like, what happens directly after the song has ended? The cheering and patting on backs and hugging, that bugs the fuck out of me.
The breaking into laughter.
Yeah.
Like, whenever they try to suggest that this is something that actually occurred,
right,
that's a problem for me. If it is heightened reality, and this movie does both, because there's one of, I can't remember which song, it might be somewhere. There's a song between Tony and Maria where everything kind of fades away and gets more colorful. And then the minute the song ends, it gets less colorful and the bricks come back into focus. And it's right. like, we're back in the dirty city. And that right. is gorgeous and brilliant. Yes. And I love that shit.
I appreciate that.
But the song's done. Let's all laugh and clap. No. Yeah. Terrible. Like
as if, yes, we all just spontaneously burst into the song and choreography. So no.
Only place that I believe, like, that I'm like, I accept that this really happened is the dance-off and maybe America.
Maybe.
Like, I can see those people being like, I can 1,000,000% see those people having this fight, but yeah, being like, you know what? We're going to turn this into a song. Plausible.
Rap battle.
Yes.
Basically, dance-off.
How does Jet's song end? Do they kind of just glower at the camera and then we cut away?
I don't remember.
I think it is like a glowering, just like, I don't know, ooze back into the sewer.
Or wait, do the cops show up?
I think it cuts away.
All right.
I really thought they said the whole fucking street, by the way. They're saying buggin', the whole buggin' street, but they know what they're doing.
There's a lot of almost fucks in this. Yeah. They say mother lovin' at some point. I was like, I didn't know you were allowed to say that in 1961.
Saucy.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So do we believe that Tony is an actual, like, he's the actual dream, or is he just a big fucking problem? Like, is he just the one that just, like, ruins everything? Because to me.
Yes.
I'm just like, Tony, you kind of fucked all of this up.
It's all his fault. This is all his fault. Every single piece.
She still wants to go off with him. And this is one of the things that, and I'm sorry, I know this is your favorite fucking genre, subgenre of film, but I hate this whole, the Romeo and Juliet of all of it, of like, you've known me for 5 minutes and we're both ready to, like, burn the world down for each other. And it's crazy to me.
Right. I do think that this is a separate but related trope. And I also have a very high tolerance for love at first sight because I kind of believe in it in real life.
Have you ever seen someone across a crowded room and is like, yeah, that's the one?
It wasn't a crowded room, but Colin. Like, when I saw Colin, my very first thought was like, Carrie's brother's really cute. But like, it was when I got to, like, that first night, I was like, this guy's going to be important to me. I think we've talked about this before.
Yeah, we kind of have. Yeah. But I guess it's just, I don't know. I know it's movies, you know, suspend your reality.
And they're teenagers, just like Romeo and Juliet, you know, like they're irrational.
That was another thing I wasn't too clear on how old.
Because they're all in their 20s. They're all right. Well into their 20s. Right. Like, I think Rita Moreno was almost 30.
Like, is Maria supposed to be in high school? Is that what this is?
It feels like 18, 16. Like, okay. Maybe Tony is supposed to be 18 and she's like 16, 17.
That's usually the way. And also, yeah.
They're youths.
I read that Sondheim, he wasn't happy with I Feel Pretty, after the lyrics of it afterward. He started to feel like though it was too wordy for a girl like Maria, which I don't know how I feel about that, because it's like, why
too
wordy?
He thinks she's not smart enough to sing that song?
Yeah,
I don't like that.
Like, yeah, like, really? Like, how does that equate? Like, how does that, at what point are we thinking that Maria is unintelligent? Like, there's nothing to suggest that in anything that she does and anything that she says, just her youth.
I completely agree. And I think that maybe Sondheim is doing a little bit, well, she's a girl. Sorry. I know probably. People are obsessed with that guy. I don't mean to.
Yeah, because I was like, I read that before and I'm like listening to the lyrics pretty hard. And I was like, there's nothing in here that she's not like doing physics, like hard, like physics equations or something. She's singing about her emotions. Like, damn. Like, can women have nothing? Like, what the fuck?
I feel guilty that I suggested that Stephen Sondheim is sexist. I have no idea what I'm talking about. My connection to Stephen Sondheim is primarily through recent movies. I am not a musicals person.
You can absolutely make the case. I don't mean that as an indictment. I mean that, you know, he was writing stories for public consumption before the year 2000.
Right.
Him and everybody else. Company is one of my favorite musicals, and you can certainly find a streak of that character's a bit of a player. That's why they gender swapped, to use another bad term, Company, to put a woman in the lead role when they revived it, because otherwise it's kind of icky now.
Is that the one that the song at the end of Marriage Story is from?
Being Alive?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, because this, like, when I say, I'm like, I think about Marriage Story, and I think about this cameo in Blue Moon, when baby autistic Stephen Sondheim shows up for 5 seconds, and then I it's not a movie, but Merrily We Roll Along, I was kind of like, okay. So anyway, I am a bad person who isn't obsessed with Stephen Sondheim.
You can also find contrary examples. And, you know, Sunday in the Park with George has a female lead.
Okay.
You know, who is much better treated. The female characters in Into the Woods are the only ones that aren't dummies. You know, you can make the argument either way, but you're justified in observing it here. That said, as Camila was getting at, no one's dumber in this than Tony.
Like, right.
First of all, I'm pretty sure he would have been aware by that point. Two guys are going to have a fist fight and then we're done. This is going to take care of itself. Even assuming that Maria still doesn't like that, Maria wants him to go and interfere. The move then is to go, let it happen, and then go back and say, I talked them down into only having a fist fight, or I got there too late. They were beating each other up. It's over now. Instead, he runs in with no plan, but to ask nicely, like, hey, no, we can't. He doesn't have an argument. He just runs in and starts shouting. Even at that point, the road between I'm here to prevent violence and whoops, I killed your brother is a long road that he walked down quickly.
Yes.
Exactly. Man.
I will say the one moment where Maria really seems like a dummy is when Chino shows up and she's like, there wasn't a rumble. And he's like, I just came from the rumble, lady.
Look at my face. Yeah, and it's also like that the whole rumble scene, yes, they were agreeing to duke it out, which, yes, just fine. Just, yeah, go ahead and do it. That's what you got to do. At whatever point, the knives come out, and then old dude is surprised when he stabs someone. Like, what did you think was going to happen? Like, it just seemed like, was it Bernardo who was just like, oh my God, I stabbed him. Like, he brought out a knife.
I mean, all of them act surprised that someone gets stabbed when they're having a knife fight. Which is usually the outcome.
Right, yes. I don't know what were we doing otherwise with it. I didn't see anybody bring any butter out or any bread, so why? Like, you knew what you were doing.
And he elaborately scales like a 15-foot fence when anybody's is standing in a pipe that goes to the other side of that fence. This guy's a dummy. He's a little bit of a dummy.
Yeah, he does like the whole rushing into a room without like checking out his, like, when he's sneaking into the dress shop to see Maria, he like comes barreling in like, sir, you know, you're supposed to be sneaking. This is supposed to be a covert. And he's just like, hey, I'm here to fuck. Like, I just like, oh, hi. Oh, hi, Anita. I didn't see you there.
Mm-hmm. Regarding anybody's, I thought that was an invented character for the 2021 version, because I did not realize that we were doing genderqueer characters in 1961.
Oh, the guy or the girl who wants to be part of the gang?
Yeah.
Huh.
In Spielberg's version, he cast a non-binary actor.
Yeah.
Really, like, trans representation in 1961. Right. And in the, you know, in the Broadway version that came before that, there are early drafts with a song where anybody's had a song that made it even more clear. But it's perfectly clear here. This is just a trans man in a movie in 1961, which gets back to my overall theory. Stop acting like this is new.
Yes.
You have seen West Side Story.
Right? I didn't realize. So wait, so it is a trans man in the 61 version, or this is just the character, or like this is the actor or the character?
No, the character is coded as a trans man here, but in deleted lyrics, like that's even more like spelled out for you. Yeah. And I appreciate that doesn't make up for the brown face, but you know, it helps.
It's so, and I think even Rita had some on. That's something like they had tried to darken her up some.
I think that they were like, go get a tan. Go sit in the sun a little bit, lady.
Listen, I don't know what kind of makeup Puerto Ricans in New York wore in the 1950s. I don't think it was that.
No.
But let's not presume. The trailer for West Side Story.
Don't own the streets.
Go play in the park.
Keep off of the grass.
Get out of the house.
Keep off the block.
Get out of here.
Keep off the oil.
A gang that don't own the street is not.
Today the minutes seem like hours. The hours go so fast.
They will go wild.
Just
stop and watch it fall.
Unlike other classics, West Side Story grows younger.
This is correct. You just show some of West Side Story and then everybody goes to the movie.
Yes, right.
For 3 minutes.
Yeah, well, I'm not putting in 3 minutes of trailer.
And your letterbox list is pre-Giuliani, dirty old New York. All movies both set and filmed in New York before the inauguration of Rudy Giuliani.
So, all of them?
That's
wow.
I mean, it's a very long list.
Okay.
It goes back to Shorts.
That's crazy.
Holy cow.
Silent Shorts, which is a lot of movies, but it's very good because sometimes you're like, I want to watch a New York movie, and you do not mean when the friends are living in New York. You mean, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
Can I just re-recommend the movie 1001? Just anybody who's like, I don't know, who's this Teyana Taylor person?
Oh, yeah, I need to watch that still.
It's a great movie.
We could do this for quite a while, but we have some business later in the episode. So do you want to rate it?
I'm looking up what I gave Fiddler on the Roof.
Oh.
I gave it a 90. I think this is one less than Fiddler on the Roof. I'm giving it an 89.
Do you just have yours or is it?
Oh, I have. I can tell you.
Yeah.
Camila, you gave Fiddler on the Roof a 48.
Really?
Yes.
I don't remember disliking it that much.
And Sean, you gave it a 93.
Well, it's definitely, I definitely like it more than Fiddler then.
That's interesting because I was thinking, well, this is going to be one better than Fiddler on the Roof. I'll give it a 92. And I also landed on one less than what I gave Fiddler on the Roof. They're tied. 93.
Okay.
72.
That's really that for Camila, that's 100 if you're a musical. It's about a 72.
I mean, I also say I don't like musicals, and here I am with two musicals way, way, way up in my rankings. So right. I'm full of shit.
Lands us on 84 and 2/3. Not quite in our top 10, but very, very close. We think you should probably see Fiddler on the Roof.
And West Side Story.
We definitely think we should see Fiddler on the Roof. We also think you should see West Side Story. Watch classic. I went to Sound of Music a couple weeks ago. It's great.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
You know what it is? People are singing and dancing and performing. And
that's entertainment.
And there's costumes. It's entertainment.
Yes.
We're getting away from entertainment in our movies.
We're moving to content. We need entertainment.
Exactly.
Amen.
Two, a brand new bingo card. Camila, give us a tour.
We have Ebert gave it a poor review. A career sacrificed. A title is a person's name. And the quote, there is good in you. And also, if the if the number one song happens to be by Mariah Carey. There's a couple other things too.
Mm.
But yes, those are the highlights.
So on this card, we definitely get staring out a window sadly.
Yes.
Yep.
There's also another square is that I have a representing trinket in my studio. So of all the Funko Pops and posters and whatever fandom tchotchkes I've got laying around in this place, if the movie that we have reviewed is represented, better like Psycho, one of my Psycho posters, then we get to knock off that box. But I guarantee there's nothing in this room that has anything to do with Maria, Tony, Sharks, or Jets.
We also have the square for animal dies. Are we talking non-human animals?
Yes.
Okay.
Like
actual rough roughs or meow meows or meows.
Now, career sacrifice. Tony is prepared to give up his box carrying job. Maria is ready to leave her dresses job.
No. No. Okay.
There are jobs and there are careers.
Right.
Our bingo card gives us extra vetoes. And I decided that we should get a preemptive veto as a present to ourselves for our 200th episode, which is our last episode about A Few Good Men. Hooray. So did everybody pick one?
Yes.
All right. Who wants to go first with what they are preemptively vetoing?
I'll let Sean go because I have two. And just in case he picks one of them, I'll let you guys go first if you only have one.
I had to convince myself to even look over the list. And I did. I gave this some thought, but ultimately went with my first instinct, which is we've done two Transformers movies. We vetoed another Transformers movie. That still leaves three more on the list.
Damn.
Those odds are too many. Exactly. So I'm taking out one of them. I just picked the one with the lowest tomato meter score, which was Transformers Revenge of the Fallen.
Thank you.
I preemptively vetoed the odds of us dealing. And Tony, don't get cute. I know that we've had some things to say about one battle after another, that now is not the time to be like, well, you can lower the odds all you want. Every movie has the same chances. Here's another. No. So Transformers Revenge of the Fallen, no longer a possibility. I'll throw it to Camila.
All right. I decided to go with the one that's probably the most immediate, seeing as what our next picks are going to be. And it's quite possible that Madea's family reunion could pop up in our Black History Month. So, and I refuse to allow that to happen. So, yes, I would like to get as many Tyler Perry films off of this fucking list as possible.
Thank you. These choices are both so good. I am picking, similar to Sean, was like, I know what franchise I'm aiming at. And then I kind of had to throw a dart. I would like to reduce our chances of having to do another Harry Potter episode.
Oh, thank you.
So I just kind of randomly, I'm choosing the Half-Blood Prince.
Right on.
That would be especially pointless. The late ones, like,
yeah,
the Don't Stand Alone as well.
Yeah.
You know, that would be pointless among the doing another Harry Potter.
And one. I've never seen the last two. So like if we had to watch them, then I would see them, I guess. But if they come up and I have a veto, I'm spending it because trans people are awesome. And J.K. Rowling is an asshole.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Good vetoes, everybody. It's a small percentage change, but it just makes our list a little bit better. I did even think about current number one movie in America, Mercy, because
really, that won a box office weekend.
Oh yeah, that's what dethroned Avatar.
Ugh, gross.
Which brings us to You Can't Handle the Truth. It's not the thing is it's not hard to watch enough to warrant being vetoed. I thought about continuing the bit because the first time we did this, I vetoed Ghostbusters Whatever the Fuck, which was the number one movie that week. But Mercy is bad. You don't need to get into like a discourse on AI. If you're unaware of this movie, good for you. Chris Pratt is a cop who has spearheaded this effort to move Los Angeles, near future 2029 Los Angeles, to move Los Angeles to an AI judge, an AI judicial system.
Judicial system.
Yeah. What was that?
Sorry, it's from the Dana Carvey HBO special, which is recorded into my brain. Yes.
Have you noticed you can't say the word judicial without sounding drunk? Have you noticed that? Your Honor, I really believe that the judicial system... Have you been drinking? No, not at all. Just that the judicial system... Bailiff, take him out of here. I'm not drunk. It's a judicial system. It's a judicial system.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good one. Yeah. That's a good one. And then he is accused of killing his wife and has to face the AI. It's Minority Report for Dummies. Mm. Here are the two problems. This will contain Mercy spoilers. One, the trailer for this movie was basically like, you have no reason to care, but it's a great 3D experience. Come for the spectacle. It's a fucking guy strapped to a chair looking at screens. Nothing happens. And what does happen is flat in front of him. There's no depth to the image. Of any kind. He's literally looking at it. It's like he's watching TV. I don't need to see that in 3D. I don't need to see that at all, but I especially don't need to spend an extra $4 and use up a pair of disposable contacts for it.
So
completely
unnecessary. So this is like they legit offer this film in 3D.
They're recommending you see it.
The reason that this movie dethroned Avatar is because Avatar wasn't in every 3D theater anymore.
Right,
because of this,
as they gave it over to this nonsense, and then this is the spoiler, trust me, you're better off. The premise is he's got 90 minutes to reduce his likelihood of guilt beyond a reasonable doubt, however you want to phrase it, with a literal ticking clock on screen. If you cannot derive enough drama out of that, get out of the business. Because what happens is, with about 15, 18 minutes left, the AI goes, you're right, you didn't do it. And we switch to a normal, now the guy who really did it is driving a truck full of explosives towards the AI court, and Chris Pratt's daughter is in the truck, and he was going to be executed in 12 minutes. We already had enough drama. Yeah. We didn't need this off week episode of Walker Texas Ranger bullshit to get us to the end of the movie.
I did notice that there were scenes of Chris Pratt not in that chair in the trailer, right. And I was like, okay, so I guess he doesn't stay in court the whole time.
Right.
Yeah. Because boring. We did not even have the courage of our convictions.
Right.
I just assumed we were just going to be going back into like what's happening. Like we'd be going back and forth as he's trying to prove his innocence, that we'd just go back to where like a lot, I guess it could have been much more clever. Yeah, yeah, like they could have done so much more with that premise.
Rebecca Ferguson bot would tell his cop partner to go to the scene of the crime, and on like a body camera, it would scan around the scene of the crime, and sometimes it would be like recreating crime scene, and it would do a little digital like, here's where the knife might have been. So dumb. So dumb. What I did like was, very briefly, Netflix documentary Miracle, The Boys of 80. If you've seen the movie Miracle, this is the documentary about the same thing, when a bunch of teenagers from the U.S. beat the professional hockey players from Soviet Union in the 1980 Olympics. It's great, and you get to watch side-by-side pictures of little old men when they were mulleted 1980s hockey goons and compare their faces. That's great. Really good documentary, especially if you're getting hyped for the Olympics. That's really good. I watched some older movies I really liked. Speaking of problematic but good, I watched Dressed to Kill with Michael Caine.
Oh boy.
Which I had never seen.
I've never seen that.
Very, very Silence of the Lambs times 10 kind of issues. But Brian De Palma, gritty thriller. Speaking of gritty thrillers, less good, so fascinating. Has anyone ever heard of Last Embrace with Roy Scheider?
No.
I love Roy Scheider.
This is very early Jonathan Demme, like avowedly doing a Hitchcock imitation where Roy Scheider's wife has been killed and he's a government agent who thinks the government is out to get him and he's on the run. It's a narrative mess. It doesn't matter at all.
Yeah.
And I had truly never heard of this movie. That's really good. I had a rant about Westerns and Audie Murphy and a movie called No Name on the Bullet, but literally no one, I barely care, let alone anyone else. So let's get to Send Help.
Yeah, Robin, I was going to say, don't forget Send Help.
Yeah, no, I'm going to use that to transition to your You Can't Handle the Truth.
So Triangle of Misery. Get it?
I was asked yesterday, how is this different from Triangle of Sadness? And I was like, because this one's fun, but gross.
Send Help is, I enjoyed watching it. It is too gross for me. Like, Raimi is Raimiing, and there's just a little bit too much of gratuitous grossness. And then Sean and I saw it together, and I was talking to him afterwards that I think that both of the leads are slightly miscast. Rachel McAdams is just too pretty to play someone who everyone avoids and feels awkward around. Like,
but she's wearing glasses.
Exactly. Like, literally, like they do the thing of like her hair's a little messed up and her shirt doesn't fit very well. And it's like
her shirt is untucked, half tucked in.
She's so gorgeous. People would be nice to her no matter how awkward she was.
Right.
So there's that. And then what's the Dylan O'Brien? Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. He just is so icky. Like, he's such a smarmy in a bad way person where you're just like, I don't want to shake hands with you because I think that it will come back slimy, you know, like, and the narrative doesn't make so much sense when he's someone who you'd be wanting to avoid so much.
He is too unambiguously evil.
Yeah.
Like you need a little bit of my alternate casting that I texted while driving to Robin on the way home because I was so convinced I was right, is Mary Elizabeth Winstead and Wyatt Russell should have been. Not that Mary Elizabeth Winstead is also very, very beautiful, but like could probably hide that more efficiently.
Yes.
And Wyatt Russell like is capable of being charming in a way that Dylan O'Brien is not.
And he's also more good looking. Like, Dylan O'Brien's fine, but he's very bland looking, and Wyatt Russell is like a handsome person.
I agree with all of that. That's
Camila
said,
just made a face like, still... what? Was that about Dylan O'Brien being fine or about Wyatt Russell being handsome?
About Wyatt Russell being handsome.
Okay.
I mean, it's... I don't want to get into it.
No,
he's not handsome. Like, that's it's okay. It's just as a matter of taste. That's all.
Fair.
A matter of,
I certainly liked it more than Robin. Yeah. I'm obviously going to be more Sam Raimi friendly.
I think most people liked it more than me. And I didn't dislike it. Like, I'm at 3.5 stars.
Yeah. You're just like, ew.
Oh,
just like you.
then you actually liked it more than me. I gave it 3 stars.
Okay, there you go.
With still a recommendation, my drawbacks were, yes, it's too gross. Yes, there's an unnecessary zombie dream sequence because he can't help himself. The narrative, I don't want to spoil anything. The narrative
three stars is probably better.
The narrative is refreshingly...
When I think about the plot, I'm like, yeah, 3 stars.
It's refreshing that the narrative is unpredictable. That also makes it unsatisfying.
That's like, such a good way of putting it.
Thumbs up, you didn't do what I was expecting, but what you did was like less interesting than what I think I was expecting, but good for you anyway. I still think that people should see it because it's fun and because Sam Raimi has made 2 non-IP movies in the past 25 years.
Oh man.
So like, go.
Yeah.
But,
please encourage this behavior.
Right.
And
Robin, what else do you have?
I saw Testament of Anne Lee fucking finally, and I loved it, and I'll die mad about how Searchlight did this movie wrong. That's all I have to say for now, because I don't want to get angry. But no, it's such an interesting and cool movie, and I recommend it highly. I put on my... Camila, have you watched Heated Rivalry?
I tried, like, my friends...
Tried?
My mom's group chat... they are all about it. One of them like threatened to defriend me if I did not watch this show. I watched the first episode and it doesn't do it for me.
Okay.
I'm so uninterested in everything happening on that screen. scene.
That is fascinating to me. Well, I'll just end the conversation there because it's not a movie, but I did want to say, and I won't end it there, because I wanted to say that I am impressed with Sean because he did not immediately kick me out of his house when I said that episode 5 of Heated Rivalry is as great of a televisual achievement as episode 8 of Twin Peaks The Return. But I believe that in my heart.
Have so thank you, been Sean. Watching
and Camila,
Heated
I'm
Rivalry,
I'm sad for you.
That's okay.
I'm not
Sean just made, Sean just frowned and shook his head. And yeah. It's not his business. This is not a TV show for straight men.
It's not
his business. Yeah, like I have no opposition to this. I'm very happy. I'm very happy everybody's having a good time. Like
I was just curious because Robin had compared one thing to the other in front of you, and I was like, well, does he know, like, what? I just wanted to get your thoughts on the comparison, but no, you didn't. You have no idea what she means by
look. Every now and then, we'll drive by a bar. Sometimes that bar is in a very urban environment. Sometimes that bar is in a very rural environment. Mary Beth is like, ooh, look, a little bar in the middle of nowhere. I wonder what that's like. And I'll say, that bar is not for us. That bar is for other groups. That's where right. I am with Heated Rivalry.
Yes.
Because this is not for me at all, I will just be happy for everyone else.
That's where I am too. Like, I tried. Like, I gave it the old college try. I watched the first episode and it's just like, it just wasn't doing it for me.
I'm very sad for you, frankly.
I'm sorry, but
I just wanted to mention that.
I get my kinks elsewhere.
That's good. I don't think I have any other. Oh, I saw Dead Man's Wire. That was pretty good. What made us start talking about hotel room movies? Was it A Few Good Men?
Probably.
Because that is a hotel room movie.
It comes up fairly often.
Yes.
Yeah.
That is a hotel room movie for sure. I mean, we should let Camila go, but like, I do want to talk about the Oscar nominations. But let's let Camila talk.
Okay, yeah, I only have like 3. Shadow Force, I finally watched that with Kerry Washington.
Yeah.
It's disappointing. Like, it's fun enough, but after a while you're just kind of like you're having fun with it, but you're also... I was also like really aware of how much better it could have been and how much better it should have been. And I was being pulled out of it like by different things like Kerry Washington. She's not the like, but yeah. So it's just like, you know, it's, I gave it like the 2 stars and a heart on Letterboxd because it's just like, it's a good enough time, but it's also like, oh, you guys could have done so much better. I really wish you had like, Method Man, like, I just want it to be so much more. And then speaking of that, The Strangers, Chapter 2, that is also,
I forgot
understand.
They did that.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I'm so confused. Like, nobody is talking about this. Nobody asked for it. And yet, they keep putting these movies in the theater. Like, it should
chapter
just be...
Chapter 3 is out next week.
That's what I'm saying. Like, who is fucking clocking this? Nobody cares. Nobody. And once we've seen it, we don't care. But yet, it's just put it on Netflix and be done with it. Like, stop. Because this is... It's too much. Like, the whole point of it, and I'm going to watch, because I'm like, you know, 2/3 of the way into it. I have to watch the third one now. But it's like, why? The whole point of the first one was that we never found out who they were.
Right.
We're now getting into stranger backstory. Into
it's
like
the opposite
the whole
of
thing.
What it needs.
Yeah, it's too much.
you'd have to rename it The People We're Familiar With.
Right, yeah. See, the like, strangers our neighbors. One. Like, the acquaintances. Like, now it's...
Do you ever wonder if a movie is a money laundering scheme? Are you ever like,
yes,
is there a the producers thing happening with this?
Right. There has to be, because it just makes zero sense to me. And I'm also thinking that I'm assuming that all of these were filmed at the same time, because there's no way a studio would have seen what had happened in that first one and been like, yes, go back. Here's more money to go make 2 and 3. But yeah. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing that I saw was a documentary, another Elizabeth Smart documentary called Kidnapped on Netflix. It's new. It was done very well, but it's also like, I mean, we all know this already. And like, she's involved. I mean, we talk more to her sister, who was like really important in helping them catch the dude who did it and find Elizabeth in the first place. But I would like to dig into a little bit more about Elizabeth's recovery and how her life has grown and who she is now, as opposed to like keeping on like going back to this tragedy in her life and pulling her back into it. And it's like, damn, like how many more times is she gonna tell this story? But it's worth a watch. And that's it.
Robin, I'm literally going to set a timer for 6 minutes. 5 didn't feel like enough. 7 felt like too many.
I will not take that long. I just wanted to say these are some of the best Oscar nominations in a while. Like,
I might actually watch this year live.
That's really exciting. We could do the thing because we'll all be in different places because I'm going to be in California. We could do the thing we did that the Parasite year.
That's right.
Where we sent each other voice notes. So I assume that you're like, I'm just so happy about the Sinners.
Yes. Bonanza. I need to see what happens in real time because I don't want to be like waking up to a bunch of bullshit in the next morning. It's like, let me process this now.
I mean, like, Sean, I don't know if you've gone through, like you were saying, like Sinners could win 12, like, you know,
yeah.
Have you picked the 12 that you think it's going to win?
No, I'd have to look at it seriously. I have a lot of, somehow this has made me more nervous for it because I'm like, it feels like being this is now the most nominated film in history. It feels like that could trigger something in the silly minds of some of the people who vote to be like, well, then it already is a winner. We don't actually need to give it any of those awards.
I think you're 100% right.
Right.
The acceptable outcomes for me are Best Picture or 10 or more Oscars. Like
that's all you get. One that's of those,
like yeah. If either one of those happens, if it wins Best Picture, I'm happy. If it wins 10 plus Oscars, but Best Picture isn't one of them, mm-hmm. I'm happy. But I do feel like it's unpredictable. These are unpredictable Oscars because there's a lot of categories where you can make the argument, this is going to win because of this, this is going to win because of that. Clearly, Sinners is well admired by the voters to get nominated in basically every category.
Right.
We just don't know how much this specific, a lot of the other voting bodies have just been enchanted with one battle after another. And we don't know how much this voting body is or if it's fading. There may be, and my hopeful interpretation is that one battle is fading a little bit.
I mean, I definitely feel less confident that you're going to have to buy me that beer than I did before nominations day. I will say I predicted that F1, the movie, was going to get a Best Picture nomination. And so I'm now very cocky about my predictions. Right. And my new cocky prediction is that Delroy Lindo is going to win Best Supporting Actor.
Because that
nomination was by far the highlight of nominations morning. I woke up my neighbor screaming my little heart out. But there is precedent for somebody who doesn't get precursors and then people like don't understand that they're an option. And then once they get that nomination, they go, oh, yeah, that was the best supporting performance. So that's my big predict right now. And I hope I'm right, because like Camila said, long overdue. He was robbed for Five Bloods and is just one of our best. So, yeah. And I'm just so happy that Ethan Hawke got a nomination. And I'm happy that Kate Hudson got a nomination for Song Sung Blue. I am on team. Kate Hudson is incredibly good in that movie. So. And I just like that she got an Oscar nomination 25 years after surprisingly losing to the Delroy Lindo of the year 2000, Marsha Gay Harden, to bring it full circle.
Yeah.
I think that's all I have to say. That was less than 6 minutes.
I will say that I think supporting actor, which is one of the most interesting, I mean, they're kind of all interesting.
Yeah.
I think that supporting actor is Delroy Lindo versus Stellan Skarsgård.
Yep.
Anytime there's two from the same movie, they're going to cancel each other out. So I don't think Sean Penn or Benicio del Toro will win. I just don't believe that Jacob Elordi is really in this race.
Right.
And Skarsgård feels like there's no reason to give him an Oscar this year.
No.
And often when I think that, they win the Oscar.
But who has seen? I've never even heard of Sentimental Value.
I saw it. It's good. But it's good. You know?
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good or it's good.
It's good. It's good with a smile on my face. Okay. But it's not something that I would. It didn't make my Pittsburgh Film Critics ballot in more than one category.
It's good. It might even be very good. It's just a movie that there's nothing exceptional about. Right. You know, like of the 10 Best Picture nominees, I could probably, you know, if you said, tell me about Train Dreams, tell me about Begonia, which I didn't even like, tell me about F1, I'd probably have more to say about every other nominee than Sentimental Value. I'm like, yeah, it was good. So, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I'm looking forward to it. We may be scattered amongst the country for them this year, but there's a lot of interesting stuff. I will not be completing the Death Race. I thought about it for a minute. Then I realized I'm incredibly busy right now, and that does not involve even... I was only 12 movies away, but even then I was like, I'm not going to... Oh, wow.
I am also not completing this year. I don't think Cutting Through Rocks is available anywhere, and I would have to go to Sean's for a whole day to watch Kokuo. So
yeah,
I'm just not doing it, but I am watching everything that's available to me. So I finished The Perfect Neighbor. Yikes.
Congratulations.
Ugh, I cried a lot.
I mean, but there's a little... It's hard to call it hope.
I didn't feel that at the end of it. I didn't. Yeah.
I was just... It's been out long enough. I was just sure this was all building to not guilty. Oh, that's our time running up.
All right.
I was sure this was all building to not guilty, and just the fact that it didn't felt like a moment of justice in a world with very little.
And then real quick, even though the timer went off, I saw the Ugly Stepsister makeup nominee. Gross. So gross.
Is it honestly, if I watch one, it's going to be that, because
you should watch it, Sean.
I'm so thrilled when a Shudder movie is an Oscar nominee.
Yes, you should watch it, Sean. You will like it. I hated it. Mm. And come see me in the good light. Sad.
Did you know the Kokuo, which we keep talking about because it was a surprise best makeup nominee, is the highest grossing live action film in the history of Japan?
No.
It is the number one live action film in Japanese history.
Okay.
And I truly had not heard of it until Oscar nomination morning.
I knew it was on the short list, but I didn't know what it was. Okay, we're past our time.
It's time to draw a movie, and it is the dawn of Black History Month. Camila, remind the listeners what the list is. Just explain how
Black movies.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Blackity black movies by Black directors, Black screenwriters, a Black lead. Yeah.
And it's important to note that this
Black
is
culture.
For better or for worse, right? Like, you did not.
Yeah, I know. Like,
no quality control here.
Right. Yeah, I could have been shady and left a couple off this list, but I did not. I played fair.
Because it's early in the year and we have all our vetoes anyway.
Right.
So it's fine.
Well, no, Camila spent hers.
Wait, don't I get an extra one because it's Black History Month? And because
you get unlimited vetoes in Black History
That's
Month.
Right.
That's right.
You put them all on the list, but also...
I can take them bitches off too. I put you in this world, I can take you out of it.
Why is that on there?
Don't like that.
Oh, right. Good. Yes. We're going to begin. No, it's good. We're going to begin with Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
Yay! Oh, cool.
That's the second one. That is the slightly less popular second
less
film.
Less cool.
You saw my hesitation and I was like, did I get out of the list? Because my mind went to Andrew Garfield time and I was like, what? How is... No. Across the Spider-Verse. Correct.
It's Miles.
Miles, yes. And I am thrilled because the Into the Spider-Verse I've watched at least two or three times. Mm. I haven't seen this since it was in the theaters.
Same.
And I loved this movie because I think that it's half a movie problems. It's just so visually striking in every moment that I can't stop looking at it.
And I listen to the score just as I'm working. It's such a good, like, banger. Like, it's really like rave vibes.
Well, I'm really looking forward to talking about it, even though I'm still mad that it's half a movie and we are never getting the second half.
What?
Hey, we are only 17 months away from the release of Beyond the Spider-Verse.
Allegedly.
Currently dated June 18th, 2027. That's just around the corner.
How many release dates into the list is like, originally they were like, next year, and then they were like, never mind.
Great. Thrilled with that. I've got a physical copy over here that I am yet to crack open. So, Across the Spider-Verse. Next time. Well, before we get to Miles Morales, I wonder if anyone has a guess for the number one song in America.
Elvis?
December 20th, 1961, the day West Side Story went to number one. Elvis is not correct.
How about, is it a Motown
61?
Song?
61.
Ooh, I don't think you could call this a Motown song.
Okay.
Bobby Darin.
No. This is certainly a song we are all very familiar with. I would be surprised if anyone could name the artist.
Oh.
Kind of a, I don't know if they would technically be a one-hit wonder, but I'd bet. The title of the song describes an action and the time that action is being
Walking After performed. Midnight.
No, but good job following that chain.
Okay.
It also describes the character who is taking that action and when that character is doing so. The character
in the
question.
Afternoon. It's in the afternoon.
The character in question is not a human.
Cat.
Dog.
And Camila was closer.
Cat. Tiger.
The lion sleeps tonight.
Oh, good. The Tolkiens.
Tonight. It is the Tolkiens.
Nice,
correct.
Camila. I would not Thank have you. Been able to pull that.
And not only is that the number one song for December of 1961, it's a long road, but that's a cover. Like, sometime in the previous 10 to 20 years, that originated as, like, a recording in Africa. So technically, this is the first African written song to top the Billboard charts is The Lion Sleeps Tonight.
Happy Black History Month, everybody.
And for Robin, it was written in South Africa.
Oh, I used to live there.